Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. Approximately every 2,500 years, a new teacher brings a body of teaching to humanity that is suited to our needs at that particular time. Usually this takes place at the end of an age. Right now, as the age of Pisces declines and our solar system aligns with the constellation Aquarius, new energies are beginning to make themselves felt. As these Aquarian energies of sharing and justice stream into our planet, the need for change can be seen more clearly. A period of chaos ensues as the old order lessens its grip on humanity, and the impulse of sharing, justice and peace inspires us to move forward in evolution as a united group.
Good morning, everybody, and a warm welcome to our regular Friday program, and I hope the new year is going well for you. In 1995, Benjamin Creme discussed and explained an article by his master called The Son of Man. We'll read part of that discussion today, but first, this is the article. Many people await the return of the Christ with trepidation and fear. They sense that his appearance will promote great changes in all departments of life. His values, they rightly assume, will necessarily alter their ways of thinking and living, and they blanch at such a prospect. Besides, so mystical has been the view of the Christ presented down the centuries by the churches that many fear his judgment and omnipotent power. They await him as God come to punish the wicked and reward the faithful.
It is sadly to be regretted that such a distorted vision of the Christ should so have permeated human consciousness. No such being exists. In order to understand the true nature of the Christ, it is necessary to see him as one among equal sons of God, each endowed with full divine potential, differing only in the degree of manifestation of that divinity. That he has achieved the fullness of that divinity is his glory, and well may we stand in reverence at this achievement. That this same achievement is rare indeed is also indisputably true. But the wonder of the Christ for men is that he was one of them. Nought there is in the trials and sufferings of men, but he did know it. Each step of the path that men still tread has he painfully trodden. Nothing is there in the whole panorama of human experience that he has not shared. Thus truly is he the Son of Man. There can be little doubt that were he to appear unannounced in our midst, few would recognize him. So far from the general notion is he that he would pass unnoticed in the crowd. Thus it is today among his brothers as he awaits man's invitation to begin his mission. Many who see him daily know him not. Others recognize him but are afraid to speak. Still others wait and pray, hopeful that he may be the one for whom they dare not hope. Only his declaration before the world will establish him in the sight and hearts of men.
While we await that day of days, let us clarify in our minds the reasons for his return. Let us understand the nature of the task which he has set himself. To establish in our midst the fact of God, has he come? To recreate the divine mysteries, is he here? To teach men how to love and love again, is he among us? To establish man's brotherhood, does he walk the earth once more? To keep faith with the Father and with man, does he accept this burden? To usher in the new age, has he returned? To consolidate the treasure of the past, to inspire the marvels of the future, to glorify God and man, has he descended from his high mountain? Let us look at his priorities. The establishment of peace, the inauguration of the system of sharing, the removal of guilt and fear, the cleansing of the hearts and minds of men, the education of mankind in the laws of life and love, an introduction to the mysteries, the beautification of our cities, the removal of barriers to travel and interchange of peoples, the creation of a pool of knowledge accessible to all. That such a task is not an easy one, not even for the Son of Man, is clear. Ancient habits of division and separation have strong roots, while fear and superstition cast their spell over millions of mankind. But never before in the history of the world has a teacher come better equipped for his task. Maitreya has come to do battle with ignorance and fear, division and want. His weapons are spiritual understanding, knowledge and love. His shining armor is truth itself.
And now here's the abridged version of Benjamin Cram's talk. The Master's article shows very clearly the enormity of the task which Maitreya is taking on. This world, and this is quoted in 1995, holds between 5.5 to 6 billion people, of whom one-fifth live in poverty beyond belief and millions starve to death. Others fight bitterly for a larger slice of the world's cake. How does he unite all these different aspirations? The first and foremost task which Maitreya has set himself is to establish in our midst the fact of God. How does Maitreya, or anyone else for that matter, establish in our midst the fact of God? Surely this is something that the religious groups have been trying to do for thousands of years. The problem for most people is that they have a completely distorted idea of God as this wrathful punisher of the unworthy, the sinners. It surely cannot be to establish that same notion of God. It must be to establish some other notion closer to the truth. Maitreya will establish the fact of the spiritual basis of life. At the core of every individual, every aspect of creation is a spiritual dimension, a spiritual purpose.
And the Master says, to teach men how to love and love again is he among us. To establish man's brotherhood, does he walk the earth once more? That is the difficult one. If he could teach men how to love, then he would have established man's brotherhood. Because what prevents the establishment of the brotherhood and sisterhood of men and women is that there is little or no expression of love. It is easy to love when there is no resistance to it. But when you love somebody who does something that you do not like, it is difficult to go on loving. In other words, we have reactive love. This is very different from the total, unqualified, unconditional love of a master. The nature of the master is to love. And the nature of Maitreya is to love as the Lord of love. He embodies the love of God, the Christ principle. By the outflow of the Christ principle through the hearts of humanity, he is teaching us not only the nature of God and the nature of love, but the ability to love. He galvanizes humanity through the power of that love to transform the world. This is precisely what he is doing now from behind the scenes and what he will do openly as he appears before the world. This will establish the brotherhood of man.
But it takes more than that. We have to look at the different stages of the establishment of brotherhood in the world. First of all, there has to be peace. Without peace, there is no world. The first priority for Maitreya is the establishment of true peace in the world, the abandonment by humanity of war and the competition that leads to war. This can only be achieved by fulfilling the needs of all the people. Until the developing world can eat and grow and live decent, civilized lives like everyone else, there will never be peace in the world. The first requirement for establishing peace is the sharing of the world's resources. The inauguration of the system of sharing is probably the easiest of all to accomplish. It is difficult to teach men to love. It is difficult to establish the brotherhood of humanity. But it's easy to share resources. It is a question of distribution, nothing else. The resources are there. The science and technology are there. No one need go without. Humanity has to accept a degree of oneness that will make it a normal and self-evident truth that the only way to peace is to share the resources of the world.
Everyone will feel better for it. The people of the third world will, of course, but the developed world will also feel better in their health, in their consciousness, and they will feel a great deal less guilty. There will be less crime and drug abuse. Cities will be much healthier and better to live in and freer from the fear of muggings and murders. Sharing is a priority because unless we can do it, we will destroy the world. And again, a quote from the Master, the removal of guilt and fear, the cleansing of the hearts and minds of men. So wrong, so distorted have been the teachings of all the religious groups for centuries that vast numbers live in guilt and fear. 2,000 years of Christian teaching, thousands of years of Jewish, Hindu and Buddhist teaching has filled humanity with fear, superstition and guilt. There is hardly a person in the world today who is untouched by this disease. Everyone is prone to fear. Guilt is the result of fear, is inculcated through fear. If you are taught that God is watching your every action, that practically everything you do from the cradle onwards is wrong, fear and guilt are inevitable. The ability to exploit, in religious terms through people's minds and hearts, in economic terms, on the physical plane, politically through the imposition of power over the actions of people, all of these tyrannies have to go and are beginning to go.
One of the greatest benefits conferred on the world by the new energies of Maitreya, his presence, the return of hierarchy, is the growing awareness by humanity of what it needs to do, the growing action of the what's called the new group of world servers. All of this is showing humanity that we're coming to an end of tyranny. The establishment of true peace needs the ending of all tyranny, political, economic, religious and social. Maitreya will remove the guilt and fear. That is the cleansing of the hearts and minds of men. And that quote again, the education of mankind in the laws of life and love. The laws of life are few but very powerful. No one pays them much attention. That is why we have our problems. The major law of life is the law of cause and effect. It dominates all life on this planet. It used to be expressed as an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, which is a very inadequate expression of the law of cause and effect. Jesus put it very simply, as you sow, so shall you reap. It is so simple that people have forgotten it or do not take it in. Whatever you sow, you reap. We are all sowers. Every thought, every action that we have sows seeds. They create causes. The effects stemming from the causes make our lives. We are all doing it all the time, making our own lives and the life of humanity.
We are all responsible for what happens in the world, for what happens in and through the human race, because we are all part of that race. We all create thought forms. These thought forms are real. Every time we have a destructive thought, we are destroying a bit of our system. The well-being of the planet depends on the well-being of our thoughts. If our thoughts are full of greed, selfishness, destructiveness, that is what we will create. When enough people are doing this, we have the problems of the world. Every one of us is doing this. We are not living in a vacuum where everything stays within the ring pass knot of our own selves. It would be easier if we could keep our destructive thoughts and actions to ourselves. Then we would reap directly. Unfortunately, it does not work that way. Our thoughts stream out from us in all directions. They impinge on the astral planes and create the astral mirage. They enter the mental planes and create or destroy on these. We are always destroying and sometimes creating continually. Multiply this process 6 billion times. This once again was written in 1995, the number of people in incarnation now, and you will see the power behind this capacity of humanity to think.
We have to see the utter necessity for harmlessness. As soon as we understand that law in the deepest sense, we cease to create disorder. We cease to create that imbalance wrought by destructive action. The nearest we can come to it en masse is an expression of goodwill. Maitreya will emphasize the need for goodwill in all relationships. Goodwill is the lowest aspect of the energy of love expressible by the bulk of humanity. Loving in the real sense is very difficult. The expression of goodwill is the next stage on the onward path of evolution which we will achieve. This creates right human relations. Goodwill is attainable. It is the level of the energy of love that should not be too difficult for humanity to express. In fact, many millions of people do indeed feel and express goodwill. That is not just being nice, tolerant and decent. All of these are the result. Goodwill is an act of force. It is the will aspect allied with the love aspect. when the love aspect informs the will aspect, you get good will. If you think good meaning love and will meaning purpose, you get good purpose, loving purpose. That loving purpose has to imbue our lives and create right human relations. Right human relations will free us from guilt and fear, will share the resources in the world and create peace. Right human relations is a priority of humanity, and Maitreya will make that one of his major concerns. The laws of love mean right relationship. The laws of life mean right thinking, right acting. When you get a combination of right acting, right thinking, and goodwill, you have the kind of free, tolerant, harmless society to which we should all be aiming. Harmlessness must inform all our actions.
The beautification of our cities. Dozens of huge cities sprawl for miles with hardly a decent building to be seen. They make life in our cities one long, stressful grind and transportation and nightmare. Our cities certainly need beautifying and reorganizing. There is a group of masters who are great architects, and they will inspire the architects of the immediate future with the concepts of the new cities. Certain parts of the new cities will be set aside as sanctified areas. These centers will be near water and the site of temples for worship and prayer. All cities will eventually have this kind of sanctuary. The best of these buildings will be built under the inspiration of the masters. These new buildings will be quite different in shape from the buildings of the past. The beautification of our cities must also allow the city dweller access to nature. Land will be made over to parks and recreation areas when the slums are erased. Areas will be defined. Each will have its own particular quality. It will be a pleasure rather than a chore to live in a built-up area. The cities of the world will become what they should be, places for the interchange of ideas, for the growth of culture, and the creative expression of all groups of people.
And the quote again, the creation of a pool of knowledge accessible to all. This is beginning to happen. It is called the internet. The internet, as it is now, is open to abuse. It is so stuffed with unusable, unworkable, and useless information that the whole thing will have to be reorganized and vetted by some committee of wise men representing the consensus opinion among the nations. However, the creation of a pool of knowledge accessible to all is a very different thing from the internet. What is visualized by the masters is an electronic library which embodies the highest thoughts, ideas, and information of a kind useful to humanity. A true body of knowledge will be built up, which will be electronically relayed and give us access to all the useful information in the world. It will create a unity of science, of ideas. Each part of the world, very quickly and easily, will have access to the knowledge of every other part. You can imagine the response of people in the third world who have access now to the internet and what they have learned about the developed world. This is completely changing their expectation of life. Therefore, how urgent it is to transform the world economically and make it possible for the whole of humanity to take part in this revolution, a revolution of consciousness, which will result when everyone is keyed into the body of knowledge.
People have limited consciousness and limited energy to expand their consciousness. They are badly educated and life itself is hard and limiting. This is one of the problems for Maitreya. The minds of most people are pretty closed. They do not easily expand and learn new things. So the transformations must necessarily go at a more leisurely pace than many might want. It is difficult to expand the consciousness of humanity quickly because when many people come to about age 25, their minds stop expanding. Unfortunately, most of life today is based on competition, which is why we have such commercialization of society. Commercialization, according to Maitreya, is now coming to an end. It cannot do so soon enough. The collapse of the present economic system will end it, and competition will be replaced by cooperation. The idea of cooperation itself begins to release one's consciousness. When people begin to think in terms of cooperation, they begin to read more books, to study teachings, which up until then they have never studied. Their minds expand to accommodate the teaching. The bulk of humanity are too tired, too jaded, too limited in the experience of life, in their capacity to create, to have any chance of expanding their consciousness.
That covers, if inadequately, the priorities of Maitreya. He has much to do. Maitreya's here. He is here to stay and is awaiting his opportunity to come forward and declare himself openly to the world and begin his task. That's the end of our program. Thanks very much for listening. Love and blessings to you all.